The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
Welcome to episode, I forgot the number, 22, 20-something?
Let me see.
You know, I mean, that's the problem when you're so excited to talk about a great comic with a great person. You forget the little things like episode numbers every now and then. Hey, Sean.
Hey, what's going on, Brent?
Not much. Sean and I have been working on some Skype issues for about the past half hour. I think this is episode 21, yeah. About the past half hour.
Yeah, let me see. Yeah, actually, you know what? This will be 20. I think the Latinos one was Latinos in Comics and Media. That was 21.
That was 21. Yes, this is 22.
Deuce.
Oh, yay. So, I'm still a little paranoid. We had some sound just stopping. We had some pauses, but we've worked out some issues, and we hope we'll be able to bring you a great show. You know, I did not talk to Sean about this whatsoever, but it just hit me. It just hit me. There have been some cover controversies going on in the world.
Batgirl, yeah.
And I was just wondering, would we want to do just a little, like, 5 minutes on what our thoughts are on? Like, I haven't even talked about this issue at all with Sean, so I don't even know if he.
I'm familiar with it. Yeah, actually, yeah. It's actually been it's really been a buzz this week. The Batgirl 41 cover.
By Raphael Albuquerque.
Yes. With the Joker, where the Joker is actually holding holding her like at gunpoint. Not even gunpoint, gun drop. You know, it's just like
he's terrifying. She's not happy about it. She also, not only is he terrifying, she looks terrified and definitely in a victim role there.
Very much so.
And that seems to... I woke up one morning and then suddenly the internet was on fire, as it is like to be.
Quite frequently, you know. At least this way, you know, and no disrespect about the issue, because it is a serious issue, you know. But it takes a little bit of the heat off of the flack that female Thor got, you know, so.
Like, see, this is the weird thing about living in Japan, because all I do is I get like a filter. There's like a big filter that covers up, so every now and then, like, something bubbles either on like Facebook or on comic book resources or something like that, and I go, but I can never tell how big these issues are, like, in the world.
Yeah, it's really big, and the one thing that got me about it, it's actually like the draw. It's a fantastic piece of art.
It really is.
But the thing that gets me is that the gun is pointed down, and that's like, and it's just, you know, and then like it's got the, and of course, like a, you know, and of course, like, you know, and then kind of, like, and then you have like that glimmer off the long end, and it kind of gave me, it had like a little bit of a possibly like a phallic intonation to me. That's not my big issue, you know, an issue with it. I mean, there is a strong victimization, you know, theme I see in it.
Yeah, to me, because I can see that representation. I can look at the picture and go like, okay. No, I can, you know, I can't say it's not there. But to me, like, honestly, that's, it's been less of an issue with the gun pointing down. And sometimes you see, like, with his hand over her breast. And to me, it's right. always been like, did you watch Stephen Colbert?
Yes.
Okay, the thing where he's like, with my black friend, with my Indian friend, with my friend. And he's got the arm there and the kind of the pointing.
Yeah.
It was more of that pose.
You know, I can see it, yeah.
With the whole, like, but since he's just, especially in that art, he's like the epitome of evil. Just that, like, true. Hey, look at my friendly posture. Just makes it all the more terrifying.
Oh, and totally.
That's kind of more of how I saw it. So it was less his pose that was, you know, demeaning to me or just like an issue to me. But her facial expression was where I saw like some of the issues. But, you know, I mean, it's I'm not dark. Trying to take away from the people who say, whoa,
God, no.
Phallic imagery pointing down. Like, that's, but.
Yeah. Not at all. You know, I mean, and then just even like kind of like with the blood, you know, it looks like with the blood being drawn across the face. I mean, but the shame is that, and especially how Raphael did the Joker, it's kind of like one of those classic, you know, kind of like one of those classic kind of Joker images, you know, and then when you really look back at, oh my gosh, why am I drawing a blank here? But, you know, the story where he shot, you know, where she got paralyzed.
Killing Joke.
Thank you. The Killing Joke. I mean, Babs and the Joker already kind of got a volatile history as it is, you know.
Yeah.
If anything, this image is kind of emblematic of it because he marked it because, you know, just in that one, like they even said in this, you know, like even in the story, it just took that one fateful encounter, you know, just with him, and it totally changed her life, you know.
And I mean, I also hear some people, just the fact that this cover is emblematic of Killing Joke, that can also be an issue.
Yeah.
That this. I mean, I don't know.
It's tough, you know. I mean, and even in the Killing Joke. It was kind of inferred, you know, that he did, you know.
There was abuse on some level. How far right. that sexual abuse went,
precisely.
It's really, it almost more depends on what your read on the Joker is.
That's true.
I mean, and then there is also thing of, like, this is Alan Moore we're talking about. Usually when Alan Moore wants something horrible to happen in a comic, he does kind of just say, like, oh, let's have it happen.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
For good or for bad.
Mm-hmm. You're right about that. You're very much right about that. But actually, Brent, not to jump topics or anything, but there is a fantastic, fantastic piece of work I've heard about. Fantastic book.
What? I don't know any of those. What are you talking
it's
about?
It's Deadly Troubadours. Talk about it.
Oh, yes, Deadly Troubadours. I know the author. He's me.
Yeah. Right, right. Top the presses.
Yeah, that went up, I guess when this episode is released, it'll have been out for about a week from Smashwords and from Amazon. Smashwords gets me a little bit more of the royalties, so if you can choose between the two, I'm not saying you should choose Smashwords. I'm saying I want anyone to read this book and then hopefully review it and talk about it. Tell a friend, and wherever you buy it is great, but if you do have the freedom of choice, since they're the same price, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, so, help me buy some comics. Help me buy some comics.
Exactly. It's for the mission. It's for the CLI mission.
Exactly.
It's for the. You. It's like a charter membership into the international.
Oh man. Yeah. I gotta figure out a cross promotion. Like you get a badge. I don't know. I'm working on that.
Yes.
So we talked a little bit about the current events. You gave me the chance to pitch a little bit.
Indeed.
Maybe our next episode we'll have you talk about my book.
Oh, you know this. I'd be glad to.
But our main point here is, why don't you introduce what we're talking about?
Oh, sure. Actually, in fact, this actually kind of jumps back into the first interview that I did with you here on CLI, where we talked
about that.
About the Cyclops episode, which is also available on the site, which is, please tell us,
DeadlyTroubadour.com, and you can also go to iTunes and subscribe to Comics League International.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And while we were doing that episode, you know, we talked about one of the big turning points for Cyclops was during a period in the X-Men and kind of in the X-Men's 2000s history, where it was helmed by a specific writer, and we didn't really find it too flattering to him.
No.
And in fact, it was Mr. Grant Morrison.
Yes.
And however, he has done many great things, and some people have kind of gotten tuned into Cyclops because of it and what he did. But he's also worked with a lot of other characters on all ends of the on all ends of the publisher spectrum.
Yep.
And tonight we're actually talking about one of his contributions to DC Comics and on a greater scale to the Vertigo line, with none other than his penned tales about Mr. Buddy Baker, aka Animal Man.
Yes. And these comics first came out in 1988.
You're
the
right.
Artist for all but one of the issues, I believe. I'm flipping through and I forgot to write down.
Oh, I got it.
Where the film was, but is the art team of Chris Trogue, T-R-U-O-G.
Yes. You got it.
And Doug Hazelwood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we're going to talk this era of Animal Man, we got to mention Brian Bolan's covers.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt.
You know, it's the art is pretty strong throughout, but really, like, the covers. You see these covers, and it just makes... I mean, at times I almost think the cover might be the best part of the issues.
I would agree with you.
That's not really to slam the issues. It's just that, I mean, Brian Boland is a great artist, and his cover art is just fantastic.
You're right. I mean, it really leaps out at you. And if anything, it's kind of his artwork. It's like the starkness and the solidity of it and the solidarity of it. Is kind of a good marriage with Grant Morrison, because at his best, and one could even say at his most signature, his themes tend to just kind of go beyond the panels that normally capture these superhero exploits. He goes into some really meta themes, and you can really tell that Boland, he cherishes showing them on the covers.
And not only can he do the meta themes, Boland, but then again, also if you look like the issue for number 8, where he's fighting, where Buddy's going up against Mirror Master, the cover.
Oh,
for that,
yes.
It's just a good superhero cover.
It's stellar,
you can tell, like, if you look at what's around, that he's upside down, and issue 9, which is the last issue we're talking about, was artist Tom Grummett.
Oh, yes.
As a guest penciler, still inked by Hazelwood. And, I like the Grummett. I like it.
I do too, I'm particularly a really big fan of John Jones, of course, the Martian Manhunter, he really stands out with the Justice League gear up sanctioned kind of a repair crew.
Exactly.
And then,
exactly.
and Buddy's like, is very confused at the side of the door.
This was such a great era for DC Comics.
It was.
Which I wasn't, reading when it came out. Sure. I was more of a Marvel fan at that point.
Okay, but, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, but growing, especially in college, when you... you meet people, you try new things. I was like, hey man, you want some DC? And I'm like, well, if, maybe just this one time I'll try a little
That's
DC.
Okay. That's and right. You're not, yeah.
That Justice League was great. You say there's a Justice League Europe? Let me try some of...
Yes, indeed.
And so I read those comics before I read the Buddy Baker, the Animal Man side of things.
Mm-hmm. And actually, if you don't mind me, if I may, the name of this podcast, in a way, is I noticed that it's sort of a clever nod to the Justice League Europe, whose previous incarnation I believe was the Justice League International.
Yes, that is exactly true. I wanted something to kind of reflect comics. Publicity wise. I look back and go like, maybe that wasn't the best move, because now if anyone enters in Comics League International, my site's never going to show up on Google, because it's going to be Justice League International Comics, and like somewhere near the bottom. But the iTunes search, it helps.
Totally, and really, between myself and of course Mr. Derek Adams, author of the Spellsword Spellsword series. We are not in the lovely Japan as our good host is. So we kind of represent,
this is an international call. And also I try, and again, I'm like, I don't want to put myself in front of the story or anything, but yeah. I do try and, find people from other countries, I've had guest hosts from Finland, from Mexico, from Japan, from China, also chiming in. I'm from Australia. I'm still trying to convince my UK friends to get on the horn. So we'll see how that goes.
Totally.
So just to look at the comic, reading, or I guess we've read 1 through 9.
That's right. Yeah.
And just as a breakdown for folks listening, issues 1 through 4. Are basically, it's an arc. It's a four part series. It's a four part storyline. And then after that, it's almost, it's a continuing story, but it is much more episodic.
Very much so.
Which I thought was kind of interesting, because maybe this is just me being silly, but I'm almost more used to series starting out and kind of the first 2 or 3 issues being like more episodic.
Yeah, kind of finding its legs, and then once they kind of get that momentum, okay, let's rope you in with an arc.
And then kind of get people a little embedded in the characters and like piece point showing off, here they are, and then doing a slightly longer storyline to really tie it together. And this, it does the opposite, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, it is. It's a really good, and like, you're right, it is very much a fun thing. And if anything, it sort of shows like the absurdity that that Buddy realizes as Animal Man, as having a really unique set of powers, but being so connect and being uniquely connected, to the world around him through those powers, more so than other heroes.
Yeah.
And it seems to affect his belief system and everything, and even trying to pursue celebrity, which is what he's kind of reluctant to do. Like you were even saying, how you don't want to put yourself at the forefront. Neither does Buddy. And that humility, it really works for him. But he has a I believe he has his friend who is like, is it his aide? I think is his agent, who's really trying to get Animal Man out there, you know, so you know, Animal Man out there to mainstream America and the world.
Yeah, no, definitely. And what I think the first thing that I think we can say really sets the comic Animal Man apart is there's so much emphasis and page real estate given to his home life.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I mean, we definitely have all the superhero scenes. He's going out, he's fighting people, especially in the back half of these 9 issues. He's mixing it up with supervillains and doing things and fighting the fights. But there's a lot of stuff about him just being at home, a husband and father of 2 kids, and what that means.
Definitely.
Which, yeah, no, that's one of the really enjoyable aspects of this comic, to me.
I think you're right about that. I mean, because they're just as important, if anything. You know, some of the other heroes and villains, you know, that appear in it, they sort of take a back seat, you know, to his family. And when you mention like the Mirror Master issue, it's not, you know, I don't give away, but it's his wife. You gain a whole lot of us. I mean, you respect her already, but she gets some cool points. You know,
yes,
for,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. Wow. So I guess where do we start? I guess that opening arc, the first 4 issues.
Yes.
It's an interesting 4 issues. Like it's kind of, to give it all away, because of course, as the first intro talks about, you know, this is, we talk about the comics, which means there's going to be spoilers.
Of course.
It's Buddy Baker, in a way, versus a unhinged Bawana Beast.
Right, right.
After, you know, Bawana Beast, I forget the country in Africa. But I'm gonna call him a tribal hero. You know, very totemic powers, can combine animals. His area is, we find this out not in a linear fashion, but kind of through the over the 4 issues.
Right.
Star Labs, or representatives of Star Labs. Yes, that Star Labs.
It was trouble back in a couple decades back.
Yeah, it's which is kind of interesting, because you know, we like being a Marvel kid more so than not. You have I'm trying to think, like Star Labs, not like AIM, it's not like it's because it goes from being like, yes. It would be suddenly if AIM was like working with Captain America going, hey, buddy, let's fix you up. And then like you'd have the good issues of AIM where they're being nice and friendly. And then every now and then you'd have this, and now we will destroy them all.
Yes.
But yeah, and they steal Bawana Beast's 8th best friend and hit him with diseases, like chemically engineered, biologically engineered diseases, and Bawana Beast comes to America to try and rescue his friends and get vengeance, and it's really unsettling.
It's jarring, you know, and the thing is that one thing that Bawana Beast has in common with Animal Man is because, not that they're inferior or anything, but they're definitely kind of, as far as recognition, they're on a slightly lower tier as far as like superheroes, as far as superheroes go. But the Bawana Beast kind of comes into his own, and I may have used this analogy before, but but somewhat like Catman does in Villains United, you know, during the final crisis. I mean, you really see where he can take it, and Morrison seems to kind of focus on the other relationship that's important in Animal Man aside from family. Mm-hmm. It's with animals.
Yes,
and when you see like the sense of companionship that Bawanabes has with the ape, and then just like in the sad outcome,
yeah.
it kind of made me relate to when I had some of my pets, pass away, or even like in the, what was the Will Smith movie where he was,
I Am Legend?
I Am Legend, thank you. The scene, with the dog? Oh my gosh.
Well, I mean, that's a Hollywood rule right there. You don't kill the dog.
Like, yeah, you never.
Best friend, shoot him in the face. Wife, oh, we can do something horrible. The dog, whoa.
Old Yeller, we back it up, okay?
You don't.
No. Man. And just in that moment with Bawanabes and the ape, it really hits you.
It really does. I'm gonna say it.
Go ahead.
I have mixed feelings about this comic.
Okay.
And I'll kind of get into the reasons why for that. But I think for the most part, one of the things Morrison shines at in this is finding an emotional core.
Yes.
For all of the stories he tells in here. I don't necessarily think the path he goes to get there, or kind of the whatchamajig, the different like designs or decorations on the story always work, but you know, the idea, the core concept of this is very powerful and very moving, and it's also unsettling.
Very much so.
Because in a way, there's the main antagonist, the scientist guy. He does get a proper punishment.
Yes.
I was trying to think of a big literature word of like, his just rewards. I just spun my wheels and was like, bad things happen, but they're appropriate.
Suffering, dude.
Yeah, but outside of that, there's no actual, other than the bad guy getting punished, and this is just one cog in the machine of the evil version of Star Labs.
Yeah.
No one actually wins here.
That's a very good, you're right, you're absolutely right.
I mean, because
stalemate.
Yeah, it's more of like the bad things that happen to the animals are arguably stopped, maybe. But then again, if they're stopped, the punishment to the bad guy. Okay, flash forward. The bad guy basically gets turned into an ape man thing.
Yeah.
And the final scenes are the scientist guy in the lab, and they're like, well, we gotta continue doing horrible things to this ape. Huh. You'd almost think his eyes are human. Bad things happen. Come in the music.
Yeah,
which means if that's going on, then they didn't even stop what they went out to stop with the animals. They just...
You're right. You know, the shoe was on the other foot, but, you know, but still all the tortures, you know, the torturous things are happening. And there's a, you know, you can see that in real life. And, in particular, like on the cover of issue 3,
with the kind of plague induced ape.
That's right. Yeah. And then Animal Man is just, you know, he's at a loss for words, and unfortunately I don't really follow up too much on it, but I can kind of see a correlation too, because when you hear about how maybe PETA and organizations of of that sort, you know, talk about how animals are used, you know, to test out, you know, like certain like cosmetic products and like the adverse effects it has, you know, and that's sort of, that's what I got from, you know, from that cover, you know. But you're right, it's a stalemate. It's an arc that it ends in a stalemate for Buddy, and you could see how it can, you know, how it can really affect, you know, sort of affect his worldview. Because let's see, because it was in remember when he punches, like, doesn't he remember he punched, which episode, which issue was, I think, where he punched the scientist?
Was that three or four?
Four. It was four. I got it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can tell it really affects, I mean, because, and Buddy, you know, for, you know, Buddy is like he reminds me almost of a Candide type, you know, he tries to be like an eternal optimist you know, but in a very, you know, and especially working with, you know, with his power being so connected to the, was probably being connected to the animal kingdom and just the cruelties that still even happen to this day. His mice, you know, it's going to affect you. And I think a lot of it went into that punch, and then just, and like later on, you know, I can't remember which issue it is, but I think he go, like his wife goes into the kitchen and is looking for all the meats that they have.
Oh,
and Buddy is, and he's throwing them all out, you know. And she,
No, that's, I like the, again, that's one of those things that, I mean, maybe it's just me and Morrison, you know.
Yeah.
But like, I love that idea of him going, "No, I'm too close to this.
Yeah.
I got to step back. I can't do the meat thing anymore. It's not, it's not what I want to do." But at the same time, like, I don't feel there's a proper build up to that.
Right.
It was like you have like one throwaway line. Like it feels like, and yeah, you know, me and Grant, we don't talk as much as we should.
Yeah, right.
You know, we've grown distant as complete and total strangers do.
Yeah. He says his page is not working.
But it almost feels like when he was writing an earlier issue and he kind of threw in the line about eating meat.
Yeah.
That like kicked something in his head. And then once that arc was over, he almost like, and he's a vegetarian now. And it just seemed like if he were a teenager, it would fit. Like, "Didn't you know, Mom? I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat this stuff. Like, yesterday you had a steak. What are you talking about?"
Maybe you're in an after-school movie or just like a current movie where you hear the piano, you know, where you hear those soft piano chimes going, and then it's just, and it's really, like I said, and it's just a really charged, you know, conversation. The other person is just looking like a deer in the headlights, you know, and the pianos won't stop. I'm kidding. Stop the pianos.
Next week on Buddy Big Animal Man. So, the issue 5.
Yes.
I don't know. This is the one where we have Wile E. Coyote Jesus.
Yes. This one is, I think this one might even be like the, in some ways it's like he really gets into like a, because I noticed like in a lot of the captions, you know, Morrison is almost like on the verge of, you know, of poetry.
Yeah.
Because like in fact, the Wile E. Coyote character is called Crafty. Is that right?
I think so.
There's this one line where he, let's see, and like Brent was saying, it's, the coyote is very much like a Jesus character. If you mind, I read a couple parts.
Oh, go for it.
Okay. So it says, "And God spoke unto Crafty, saying, You must be punished for this rebellion against my will, which I probably should have read before that, so people haven't read it. Well, anyway, so, against my will. Nevertheless, I am a good God, and my judgment will be tempered with mercy. Much afraid, Crafty spoke, saying, I will bear any punishment that will bring peace to the world. Then you must spend eternity in the hell above, said God. While you live and bear the suffering of the world, I will make peace among the beasts. That is my judgment. So God sent Crafty forth from heaven and earth. And so then all of a sudden there's a hand that has an arm that has a paintbrush, and Crafty is being painted from heaven all the way.
And while this is going on, the style of art has changed from being this from being the standard Animal Man comic art to a Looney Tunes Warner Brothers art style.
Definitely, yeah, and it's, to be honest, like, to, because, you know, it sort of gives you, I mean, I already kind of had some sympathy for Wile E. Coyote, because I know that he must have had some credit card debt out the wazoo, messing with all that messed up stuff from Maggie.
And that's something we should all understand.
I'm telling you, I think he could probably get a lawsuit going, you know, and he'd never seem to catch that darn Roadrunner, but he suffered a lot, you know, and just, But yeah, and it's just, and Crafty is just suffers so, I don't know if nobly is the word, but it's just, you know, it's like in the last couple of pages, Crafty finally gets his rest, and I think the last monologue bits there, it says strange, no pain, and then like Crafty's holding his like kind of clutching his chest, and then Buddy comes down and there's tears in his eyes, which can be kind of like, you know, like how Jesus had his, you know, how you always, I know, yeah, it's, you know how you see, yeah, the tears,
and then, it's definitely the cross pose, and
yeah.
And, you know, and I mean, there, this is one of those things, like, yeah, because there's some really powerful stuff in here, and there's also the fact that, you know, even though we can definitely paint Crafty as a Jesus metaphor and doing things, and he's someone who's killed, you could also make the argument that that he's also a servant of the old dark ones or the old elder gods from the Cthulhu mythos type thing.
Ooh,
you know, yeah, because like he's kind of he's there to recreate something. And just kind of blah 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 words. It's Morrison. Sometimes that's all you can say. But him getting like the last actual bits of word outside of the end, folks, is, you know, the kind of the guy saying, I saved the world after killing Crafty, which kind of opens up the argument of, would Crafty have been the undoing of us all? Would he? So, you know, just, I don't know, it's, and but then again at the same time, like, it's like, oh wow, we can talk about this and really get into the meat of it, and sometimes I just kind of think like, oh Morrison, you should just write a comic book, like, I don't know, it's like, I don't want to say there's not a place for this, but it feels
a bit heavy.
Heavy-handed,
there we go.
Like, I mean, he does a great job of not being heavy-handed, because you can argue it from different ways, and I feel heavy-handed is something different, but at the same time, like, I in a lot of his stuff, it does kind of feel characters get sidelined for message.
Mm.
Or like the big ideas take precedence over the little things to support those big ideas.
Which
again isn't to say it's bad, and this is probably more of just a personal taste than a and that means blah da 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 da. But I like small character stuff. Even when it's big explosion, I like the one to one, that type of stuff. That's more of my bag. And so I read this and I was like, artistry, it's great, it's good. Why don't we spend a little bit more time getting to know Buddy and his family rather than big, broad strokes?
Exactly. I think that's part of that. That person-to-person perspective, that's what made, like, the X-Factor 87 so great.
Yeah.
And even, in The Killing Joke, the moment with the Joker and the Bat and Batman
because for everything about The Killing Joke and all the bigger statements it has that can be argued as good or bad, it's very much a character story. Here's how these characters relate. And for these 9 issues, I mean, it's got some great ideas. It's got some really fun stuff, like the Mirror Master fighting in the worlds, and what's going on? Like, it's a fun little superhero story, but I do kind of feel that at the end of the day, it's less character and more big ideas.
Mm-hmm.
He whined about comic books that are regarded as some of the gold standard of comic books.
What did you think about the, about that episode, I'm sorry, I keep saying issue, about issue 6 with the Thanagarians?
It was pretty interesting. Flipping through my notes, and also flipping through the comic.
Yeah.
I think it was that kind of thing of... We had some good story there. But it is also that kind of... So much of the page time is delivered to the Thanagarian way of life and birth and serving his father and...
Cycle.
You know, he wanted a warrior son, and I, an artist... had humiliated him. My son is dead, he said, spitting in my face. We never spoke again. And it's about the bomb, so it's kind of one of those things where it goes back and forth. I'm like, yeah, I like some of the points you're going here, but then again, some of the ways of getting there, it just feels so heavy-handed.
Right.
I will show you I am a good son and a good warrior by destroying the world with my art bomb. Which I do kind of... My big takeaway from this, in a way, was not about the issue, but about, so comic book storylines basically being interrupted for a crossover tie-in has been going on for a long time now. It's just in 88 it happened maybe once a year as opposed to the constant that we have nowadays.
There was a millennium here, there was an invasion there, Lance attacks here, Evolutionary War there. Now you're blinking, it's just like...
Armageddon 2000, was it 2001?
2001. Cosmic Odyssey was a bit self-contained, but
such. We got to talk about that.
Yeah, that was so good. That John Stewart really, he really kind of.
Oh man.
Character-wise in that one.
But
the Thanagarians. Like, for anybody who doesn't know who they are.
Oh right, we didn't even say that.
You got it. The Thanagarians are an alien race, of course, part of the DC Comics family. But if you're familiar with the characters, Hawkman, Hawk Woman or Hawk, you know, and Hawk Girl. That's they're of the Thanagarian race, and they're a group of elite warriors. It's a little bit of a not to jump off to another topic, but one series that does some great justice, and I think it's one of DC's finest late 80s contributions, is the series Hawk World.
And it was Hawk World.
Yeah, it was they did an ongoing series of it, and I can't remember what it was, like, events wise. I think it was about 88, 89, but there was a 3-issue mini series, and they kind of it's a story about, you know, about the original, about Hawkman, yeah, yeah. Qatar Hall, but they sort of re-envision the story, and he's born into wealth, and he's very apart from the ills of the world around him. It has very much of a Siddhartha feel. But anyway, Thanagarians, Hawk people.
I like Thanagarian stuff for the most part. I think part of the reason I like the Thanagarians is their headpieces, their helmets. They just look cool.
They do.
The feathers and the hawk things, and you know, and I mean, I was a big fan of the early 2000s Hawkman series.
Yes.
I was collecting those in issue format when they were coming out. That was back when I thought Jeff Johns was doing a really good job. Not so sure how I feel about him nowadays. He's you know. Let's see, Now, one thing I think we can say, like, we're only reading to issue 9, and
yeah.
Morrison did the first 26, 36?
I believe so, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it ended on a 6. I forget how many. But, I mean, it is, for a comic that was coming out in the late 80s, early 90s,
yeah,
it did just some amazing stuff, especially if you're a big fan of, is it introspective? Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, where like each issue, it's more than just a comic. Yeah. If that's your bag, then really, you can't get much better than this. Even though I've been kind of like poo-pooing it a little bit, but I think each issue does get a little stronger. Go ahead.
No, please do.
Well, I was going to say, I did want to kind of go into this a little bit, just because I think one of the reasons I'm kind of poo-pooing this a little bit more is it's hard reading just the first 9 issues. Because this is the second time I've read these, and the first time I just read, like, all the Morrison ones in, geez, a week. And it really, like, I remember just keep on getting better and better and better and better. And kind of ending off with one of those, like, wow, issues that we're not going to spoil or talk about because maybe someone's hearing about the Morrison run for the first time. But I think these first 4 issues of these 9, there's a lot of just stock characters. Like, the whole aspect with the hunters in the first 4 issues, it just annoyed me. Because it felt like, hey, you know, we, like, somehow, even though this is in California, I just feel if this were a movie, they would have given them all bad Southern accents. And be like, hey, y'all, we come from California. We're gonna shoot kittens and possibly rape people because that's what hunters do. And it was just, you know, and yes, that was an intentionally bad Southern accent, just so everyone knows, because if you watch movies, that's how they do it. It just felt like so much of what made up the first 4 issues were just stock. Like, and like big ideas, really cool plot elements. How do we actually handle it? I don't know. Let's have hillbillies show up in the middle of, you know, ritzy Hollywood stuntman neighborhood, California.
Deliverance hasn't been around. Deliverance has been around what, 14 years? They don't mind.
Like, I was halfway expecting one of them to be like, you got a pretty mouth, Mr. Baker. And have just someone pull out a banjo out of nowhere. And it just felt that tropey. And that kind of set the tone for me to reading these. Mm-hmm. And kind of just going like, you're getting better and you're getting away from that. And you're like 9 and 10, I enjoyed 8 and 9. I enjoyed a lot more as single issues.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of, as good as they are, there was enough of the little things that pulled me out of it. But now that I've kind of been like, I'm raining poop from the ceiling, your parade is terrible, I want you, because you love this stuff.
Okay.
I want you to just tell me why. You don't even have to say why I'm an idiot. You just need to tell people why you love these comics. Let's end on a good note.
Okay, sure. Well, one thing about Animal Man is that, and Morrison seems to embed it in Baker's personality is that he's like the Kathy Griffin. It's like Kathy Griffin's My Life is on the D list. That's what the Morrison Animal Man series is. It's like, I got powers. I'm a hero in theory. Mm-hmm. Not a real big one. I can't roll with the big dogs. And one thing that I liked about, one thing in the early issues is that, I can't remember which issue it was, and I could turn the page, but that'll hurt my fingers. But, there's this one, Superman actually has a cameo.
Yeah.
And he's actually on the way to, like, and I think he's heading on the way to a mission, and, you know, so then Buddy's just like, wow, oh my gosh, you know, it's so nice to meet you. And Superman's, well, you know, I've got, you know, stuff to do. It's a nice outfit. That's an A for Animal Man. I didn't have to go to Smallville University for that. Anyway, so, and then it's kind of a funny moment because, you know, you have like a, you know, because you have, you know, really one of the, you know, one of the ultimate icons, you know, of the company, and, you know, and then you just got, you know, Buddy who's just getting by, he's almost like a Peter Parker trying to get by, support his family, mm-hmm, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, gets, you know, see if he can get some kind of dividends, you know, out of it. And really, that was the fun of, in a way, somewhat kind of like Booster Gold, who also came out around this time, and when he got into the Justice League International, but Booster Gold was intent on, he wanted fame and fortune, and he came to do it, and he capitalized on it. He was willing to do it. Buddy Baker, Animal Man, is reluctant to do it. He takes his friend, you know, his agent, is like, look, man, you help people, I mean,
yeah.
Right, and I mean, granted, you might have to fly like an owl or wiggle like a snake and break in two, but to do it. But still, you should really profit off of this. So Buddy is having to deal with the entrepreneurial spirit that can really help make him a big name, you know. But yet he doesn't. But he really wants to help people, and it really gets cooking, you know, like especially around issue 9, because he's been accepted into the Justice League Europe, and this is after issue 8, you know, where the Mirror Master, you know, has just kind of wrecked, you know, has wrecked the Baker's home.
Yeah.
But Martian Manhunter tells him, you know, that, you know, hey, we have this building crew here, you know, since you're a member of the Justice League Europe, you know, we want to build up your home security. And so they kind of build up a laser system, and I mean, they have like, you know, they have an alarm set up, you know, so the police, and then the league can, and come get him. And then he's like, well, it's okay. It's everything. And then I think one of the builder guys is like, it's okay. We set everything to non-lethal. The only thing you do is you'll go to sleep for probably a few minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it's funny seeing that happen. And if anything, I think like a modern day equivalent of that is when Spider-Man joined the New Avengers. And then he went from, you know, and he kind of went from, you know, like a, you know, being a teacher and just,
no, it's totally there.
Part-timing, you know, from part-timing, and now he's in the big, he's finally, you know, he's really like in the big league, so to speak. And it's fun to see how Buddy is taking to it. And it affects, and most of all, it affects his family, because like his wife is like, you know, hey, answer the door, you know, and then she gets it, and there's this like 8-foot, you know, green skin. You know, gladiator, you know, Martian dude who loves Oreos, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, that's in front of us. If you don't know that the Martian Manhunter loves Oreos, then you got to do some reading.
Yeah, but
and who sounds a lot like Carl Lumby.
Very true. Very true. but it's something I really enjoy because he's finally starting to get a. He's getting a bit more clout, and he's getting an affiliation, but it's changing his home life. And in the meantime, his son is actually getting bullied by the other kids at school because his dad's Animal Man, you know, like that's terrific. So does that mean that you can? So you can run like a hamster if you're right by a wheel. That's great. That's not Superman. That's not Batman, dude. That's not Green Lantern. You know, I mean, did he throw up when he made that uniform? I mean, the orange and blue. That's not really working. That's not Deathstroke blue and orange. That's all. I'm
No, and yeah, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, because I think you've read the later issues more recently than I have, because I've only read them once, and that was a few years back, if that soon. But as this part, you know, because this is volume one of four, I think, of the Morrison issues.
Right.
And as they go on, his family and what his family means and how superhero life and family man intersect becomes a more common theme.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, and not just kind of the treatises on existential theory and how Looney Tunes relates to Christianity. Yeah. Like that kind of gets pushed down. And so I do think if someone is, if you want to commit to reading the Morrison issues of Animal Man, commit all the way. Like,
definitely.
Don't read just these first 9 issues. And this is coming from me, who's kind of been the bit more negative about it, because it really is one longer story. And you're not going to get the full meaning of where this story is going,
or what
the picture looks like if you just look at this quarter of it.
Yeah, this isn't not going to be that perfect sample, because you're going to want to get the whole family, the whole family pack for this. But it's
to give him every benefit of the doubt, Morrison's still finding his feet here. You can see it on the pages. It feels almost like he had a great 4-issue miniseries planned. And again, I'm just reading the comics. I have no background information about this, but it feels like he had a great 4-issue miniseries planned, and then somewhere along the way, or at some point, someone said, hey, why don't we make that an ongoing? And so there feels like a little bit of wheel spinning like 5's a neat issue, but it doesn't really advance anything. And kind of 6 and 7 with the Thanagarians and the Red Death.
Yeah, the red mask.
The red mask. Those are also just kind of like concepts, but not really stories. And then after that is where it gets back into the story mode of the ongoing life and times of Buddy Baker seem to be more a part of it. So it just kind of makes me wonder, like, is that how it happened? Did it go from mini to ongoing? When did that decision get made?
Yeah, and I mean, it had to have affected them. And, I mean, of course, you know, and everything's always going to, I mean, there are always, you know, negatives and, yeah, and positives, you know, because, and I think that's, if, even what, you know, just what portions of Morrison's work I've read, there's all, you know, it's, it doesn't, you know, there's always going to be like that dichotomy because, yeah, it can be great on one hand, but on the other hand, there's criticisms that are, yeah, that are worth taking to.
And that's probably not even just Morrison. That's probably any writer. And who knows? Yeah, yeah. Maybe just since, like we said, it's talking about Cyclops recently, I saw the, there you go, Morrison. How dare you just write a character, write an existing character as he's been portrayed. Even though Animal Man really was probably like Madrox before Peter David, ooh, got his hands on him.
Ooh,
maybe, oh, maybe, yes, that's like, hello, I am a character. I wear a uniform. I will stand here. And, you know, and
that.
But
I like that. Yeah, totally.
And also, one last thing about, for, at least for me, about the Morrison issues.
Yeah.
Because I've read Animal Man stories after the Morrison ones as well.
Right.
Like, coming to my head, there was, this was a year or so before the DC relaunch, like, right, the last days of Animal Man, and then the Animal Man comics of the New 52.
That's right. That's...
And, you know, regardless of where you think they are on the quality scale, those have the imprint of Morrison so solidly on them. Like, I mean, honestly, I remember thinking when the New 52 started and reading those issues of Animal Man, I remember thinking, like, why don't you just, like, reprint the single issues of the Animal Man Morrison issues? Because that's basically what you're doing. What was my thoughts of the time? I could relook at it now and go, like, oh, they are different. But it just felt so much like the rehashed version of exactly what we're reading now.
I hear you. Well,
like the remix.
Yeah, true. And you mentioned Jeff Johns, but even like to kind of jump it back a bit. Morrison's take on Animal Man, Alan Moore's take on Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
Compare and contrast.
Oh man, I haven't read the Alan Moore Swamp Thing in so long. I think, well, for me, I think I prefer Alan Moore's voice to Grant Morrison's.
I hear.
I mean, even in like Promethea, where it's like, you know, Promethea starts off and it's a great superhero comic with some neat ideas, and then like the back end of it, or like the middle third of it, is like, this is Alan Moore, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I view the world of magic. And I think Swamp Thing is kind of the same thing. There's like a sinister poetry that transcends the page a bit more when Moore writes, and not Morrison. Now that I'm saying the two names, if I screwed up. I like Alan Moore than Grant. I'm not even going to say the last names anymore, because I'll just get it confused in my speaking head. And I think the poetry of Alan comes off a little bit more. And I think he does a little bit better of a job of embedding a story with higher and bigger themes, yeah, while, especially in his earlier years, without letting those higher and bigger themes take over the narrative.
Right.
And so when I've only read, I'm not even sure if I've read, like, fully read all of the all of the Alan Swamp Things run, but it does kind of go with that plant versus man aspect. And there's just, I don't know, maybe, yeah, there's just something about it where when he goes off on his Alan tangents, it seems to be to enhance the character and enhance an aspect of it that really deeply relates. Whereas I feel when Grant goes off into his Grant tangents,
yeah,
it's more of, I feel saying self-serving is a little too harsh.
Sure.
But it kind of has that feeling of like, I'm going to tell you, like, yeah, and that was, I mean, even reading Grant's Invisibles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just, it's got some great, great stuff in there, but sometimes I feel like I'm just slogging through.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, now you.
Okay.
Swamp Thing versus Animal Man.
Wow. My gosh. You know, I would even... The one thing that I would kind of give... Because I'm actually... It's Vince, because I'm actually... Swamp Thing is the one that's actually one that's on my to-do list, actually, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But definitely having it, so to speak, been kind of getting qualified for international all my life as a fanboy, I'm definitely kind of familiar with the story. I would say like that, you know, that I guess, because Swamp Thing almost seems like, you know, before Moore like really kind of put his touch to it, almost more of like almost like more of an oddity, almost more of a kind of a carnival-like character, and then, mm-hmm. you know, and then I think with Moore's pen, you know, there was some profundity, you know, given, you know, like yeah. a real richness of character, and all. And but then with Animal Man, you almost have like the character is kind of a light. It's like a light template, you know. It's almost mm-hmm. he's like an appetizer, you know, to the big set, you know, to the main course that you find like with a Wonder Woman or a Batman or a Superman, you know. So it's Morrison tries to kind of weight it, you know. So Morrison, you know, really tries to weight it down with some existentialist themes, and you know, like even the Red Mask issue, you know, actually has to do with kind of like almost like a suicide. It has to do
it is.
And even the Thanagarian issue, you know, prior, you know, has to do with it and all. And it's I guess they're both really interesting, like interesting reinventions.
Do you remember when Watchmen came out?
87 or 88?
Well, because I was looking at the actual suicide pages of the Red Mask. Makes me just wonder, like, how much the opening of Watchmen with the comedian had to do with the layout.
That's a good question.
We're actually going pretty long. We've hit the hour point. And I mean, yeah, I guess that just kind of shows that one thing about Morrison is there's a lot to talk about.
Oh, yes.
This is 9 issues. Or maybe it's just because when you put two comic geeks on the same phone line, because, you know, I mean, I didn't even mention a similar series that also sprung out of the Justice League International, the Giffen and Demetrius plays, the Mr. Miracle ones, where, at least for the first startup issues, until you can almost feel the hand of the editor being like, you've got to stop that. It really is just... Scott Free and Big Barter living in the suburbs. What's going to happen next?
The Ropeless with extra spandex. 86 was when Watchmen came out. 86.
Yeah. So, you know, just it just makes me wonder with those opening pages where it's kind of a zoom in to a body thrown off a building on a street, what that had to do with it.
So there was some time for that. Yeah, that's definitely a correct correlation there.
Well, this might be the longest episode to date so far, which hopefully means we had a little extra time of some good conversation.
Indeed.
Sean, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
My pleasure, Brent. Can I take a quick minute?
I was gonna hope you would.
Okay. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. Check out the Riddle Box by Mr. Derek Adams, part of the CLI. But also, the reason I actually was able to get this copy of the Animal Man trade is because there was this really here in Athens there's a restaurant called. A little restaurant called the World Famous Restaurant / Bar,
mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, comedian Margaret Cho was there last year.
Oh,
and my friend Rebecca needs to get my All American Girl box set back to me, but that's another story. Now,
Rebecca, you better be listening to the show because we're lecturing you at the end. Don't steal things, Rebecca.
I let him borrow.
That is your message from Comics League International. No, as I look at my bookshelf and see like the five books I've had from friends for at least 6 months.
Oh my gosh.
Whoops.
So much shame. I'm actually moving right now. I'm getting in the process of moving, and I have, and it's almost like, and I got all my books together, but then there's those books that people let me borrow that needs to go in a special box that's called Shame on You. But actually, the reason I was at the World Famous one time in one afternoon, and I overheard this comic conversation, and it was actually about some people were talking about Grant Morrison and talked about JLA, and so I jumped in on it, you know, and then this dude named Hubie who was working, you know, was working the bar, you know, we started talking and I mentioned that I was currently going through the JLA run, and he was like, "Have you read Earth 2 yet?" I was like, "Not yet, but that's on my list." He was like, "Pick that up." And then, so then he was like, you know, "Have you read Animal Man?" And I was like, "Well, I'm familiar with it, you know." And he was like, "Okay, I have Animal Man. Come back by. It's all you." And he gave it to me. And I've had this for a very long time. and so I had finished it up. And so I was like, so I headed by the World Famous. I was like, and he was there. I was like, "Hey, is you be here?" I was like, No, he actually moved out to, I think he moved out to Portland.
Oh.
You know, I was like, oh man, you know, but I think he was, you know, he was a fanboy, and I mean, and he really gave this to me in good faith, and really, as a result, you know, it sort of birthed the CLI episode. So you'd be, if you're out there, I still have it. It's glistening off this. It's glistening off the off the webcam.
Yeah. I can see the video, and he looks like he's taking real good care of it too.
Very much so. And honestly, the edition. This is this is the Vertigo Comics edition of Animal Man, and on the cover. You see, like, it looks like it might be the Buona Beast's ape friend, you know, mm-hmm. like howling in pain. And then you have Buddy, and he's kind of like stooped over and he's holding his ears, and he is just, and he is hurt. Yumi, I'm hurt. I can't get this back to you. I'm in a lot of pain right now, buddy. But thank you so much. This has been a wonderful read, and I'm glad to be part of the Comics League International family.
And if out there, if by some slim chance you stumbled across this rookie show on your own, and you say, I know that guy, I know that comic, you can email me at deadlytroubadour@gmail.com, and I'll relay the message. We'll get your comic back to you safe and sound.
Marvelous. We're recovery. It's recovery.
We're trying to, you know, reunite lost loves. People in their comics.
Yeah.
are there places on the internet where folk can find you, Sean?
Actually, yes, there are, Brent. First and foremost, I actually have a podcast called Beast from the East. It's a Japanese and like Asian music podcast. It's currently on the Podomatic channel. You can go to scpolite at podomatic.com and check it out. Right now, we've kind of been in a bit of hiatus. Part of it has to do with my move, you know, and just, you know, other things. But we're still, you know, we've still been active, and we're very excited here in Athens because the Slingshot Festival, local festival, is going to be in its third year, and part of the Slingshot Festival has been a visit from the Japan Night Tour. And definitely I got to give shout outs to Aja Kimura, you know, founder, creator of the Japan Night Tour. But we're having like quite a few bands. There's P Lander Z is going to be headlining, and then we've got Bo Peep is gonna be here, and there's a couple other fantastic bands, and they're gonna be rocking it here in Athens. So, but scpolite.podomatic.com. If you're in Athens, Slingshot, athensslingshot.com. That is the place to be. Also, I do some voiceover work. One of which happens to be one of the jobs. Well, one of my gigs happens to be a series of Lego animation features based on like DC and Marvel, DC and Marvel comic properties. The name of the company is called Final Feature, and you can look them up on YouTube. And I've gotten to do like some voiceovers for quite a few characters, like Orion from the New Gods, Kalibak. Got to do Lex Luthor, and I even got to do Dr. Canis, from Commander. You know,
I am so jealous right now. I'm seething with jealousy.
But still, you got Comics League International.
It's true. It's true. And you can find Comics League International, like I said, on. At deadlytroubadour.com, on iTunes, where hopefully you will subscribe. Maybe you'll rate it. If you review it, that would be awesome. And what would be the most awesome honestly, if you have a friend who likes listening to people jaw about comics for a little while, send them to the show. I try and introduce old comics, maybe some new comics, just comics that are good. I think we've only done one hate read of a comic so far. but because we do want, even with this, while I don't, like I said, I'm not the biggest fan, I respect it. And totally. I know there's a lot of people out there who do want to read it because I think it's good stuff. Also, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, I wrote a book. It's called Deadly Troubadours with an S on the end. Not to be confused with Deadly Troubadour, which I guess is me.
Yeah, I'm jealous about that, because, see, I read books. I have books from that other people lend me that I don't return, but you wrote one.
Yep, I did. I wrote one with words and everything. I think I used all the letters.
On pages.
Right now I think technically they're on, like, bits, because it's only available as an ebook through currently Smashwords and through Amazon. But once we get kind of the wraparound cover done, we're going to make a print copy available as well.
But you got bits, Brent. You got bits.
I've got the I believe the kids call them mad bits.
Mad bits.
Also, if you want to listen about Japanese music, you go to Beast from the East. Everyone knows that. If you want to hear about Japanese culture, you go to Living Japan. That's the other podcast I do with some excellent people. And if you do all those things, then I guess that means you probably know me personally. I don't know. You're like, this guy's going to ask me quizzes about his latest podcast episodes. And if I don't answer, he cries.
Don't let him cry.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
And we'll talk with you guys, I guess you'll hear from us next week at Comics League International.
Yes.